You're listening to the Chances Report on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Dave Edwards, joined in the studio, as always, by the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Mike Lovell. Mike, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Dave.
So we have a lot to talk about today. One subject that keeps coming up, I remember back in April, we spent a lot of time talking about concerns that the legislature had raised about program revenue balances. It was called a surplus at the time. And whether or not those balances had specific uses, that subject back in the headlines again recently.
Yeah, and as we all probably recall back in last April, it was found that there UW institutions had $1 billion in carry forward balances, and that was kind of a shock that kind of went out with many of the legislatures. And one of the things that I had said, I sent out a message to campus and the community that, you know, we did not have any large uncommitted cash balances. You know, almost all of our money was accounted for by many of the big projects you see going on across the campus and across the city. And that money was set aside because the state gave us money for the new buildings, but not for the programs and the people to be in those buildings. And so money that we had was really designated primarily to those buildings. And so one of the things that happened was the state said, okay, the Legislative Audit Bureau was going to actually do a review of those balances to see, okay, were they really committed? You know, what's the story here? Or do we just have a lot of money sitting around?
Mm-hmm. And what's the conclusion?
Oh, well, we're very glad that what we said last April was confirmed. You know, the Legislative Audit Bureau said that we had $88.6 million in carry forward balances last year. And it went ahead and went into the review of those funds, they found that 90% of the funds were obligated or designated for specific purposes, specific projects. So 90%, and there was about 7% of that money, which was $6.2 million, was categorized by the LAB as being undocumented. But what that money actually was, that was money of federal indirect costs that, you know, we charge overhead on projects, research projects. And so that was actually federal money that was sitting within the units on campus supporting the infrastructure for the research that was going on. And so and so then you actually took a look at how much money was actually in true reserves. It was only $2.5 million. Mm-hmm. And when you think about our overall budget being $700 million, $2.5 million reserve is not very much. And so I really feel like we were somewhat vindicated in, you know, saying that, you know, we had committed those funds, and you know, we don't have money sitting around the campus.
Yeah, what went wrong back in April or months earlier that message didn't get out?
You know, I'm not quite sure why the message didn't get out. You know, I did meet with the editorial board of the Journal Sentinel and explained this to them. They did write an article, but it just didn't get the traction that some of the legislators got when they kind of stood up on their soapbox and said, look mm-hmm. at this big, huge money, you know, the universities lied to us, you know, that they continue to raise tuition when they had all this money laying around. And so that was what the headline was. And in reality, you know, certainly we do have $88.6 million in carry forward balances, but that money is all set aside for projects that we're going to need to have coming online in the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. So this report vindicates, you know, you and the position you took, but it's a little late.
Yeah.
I mean, the headlines is what really prevailed and won the day, and it's caused you a lot of grief ever since.
Yeah, and so, you know, and the thing that really hurt was, you know, these headlines really impacted our budget that we're in right now over the biennium. The governor had originally planned on putting $181 million investment of new money into higher education, when in reality, at the end of the day, we were facing budget cuts. And so the news, the timing was really, you know, really hurt us in terms of the system and what we're facing now on campuses. Because right now, you know, I recently had put out to the units what their budget cuts were going to be, and they're going to be really painful. You know, we have one email from one of our deans saying that he had to go when he had his meeting with his chairs and told them the news of what they had to cut. There were people in tears, you know, because it's going to be so difficult, because after year of cuts, you know, in some units, you know, particularly you think about what's going on in our letters and science and the Peck School of the Arts, which are really the tightest units on our campus, these cuts are going to be really, really difficult.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do with this information now? Because you're having to deal with these cuts. Are people, do you feel, going to pay attention to this? Is there hope that in a budget repair bill something might happen?
Well, I think that the first thing, we're getting the message out. You know, I'm actually just getting ready to send a message to the campus community and our closest, you know, friends about the report and what it showed. And it really does show exactly what we said back in April. But I think, you know, looking at what we're going into next year, I do think that a budget repair bill, as much as we would like one, I do not think that's very likely. But I think that where, you know, I think that we can kind of, you know, put our weight behind this is looking into the next budget. I know that, you know, we're still a year and a half away from a new budget. But still, I think that we can show that we really are good stewards of the state's money. And if the as long as the economy stays working forward in a positive way, I'm hoping the state will consider investing or reinvesting back in institutions, because we have used the state's money wisely.
Mm-hmm. There were a number of state lawmakers who got a lot of mileage out of that report back in April, and clearly, as you say, helped derail something that the governor had already been talking about to support the university. Is this a game of gotcha? I mean, is this like, will you be able to convince people that, in fact, the university is a good steward of these dollars?
I certainly, you know, and I do have meetings, you know, one-on-one meetings with the legislators, many of them that were out, you know, crying that, you know, we weren't using the money in the right way. You know, I'm going to have one-on-one meetings. I'm going to show them our numbers exactly and talk to them about, you know, that we only have $2.5 million of reserves out of a overall budget of $700 million, which, mm-hmm. you know, to me, that's not very much money, you know, and I'm going to say, listen, if you want us to do something differently, you have to tell me what we did wrong.
Mm-hmm. Is this a similar story with the other campuses? I mean, I presume the LAB report looked at all of the campuses, not just the Milwaukee campus.
Yeah. No, and again, I do talk to my colleagues, and it's a very similar story, you know, across the system. Some of the schools do have a little bit more money than we do. You know, I think Madison in particular, you know, it does have a little bit more in research. But when you take a look at much of their money, because their research enterprise is so high, like we had $6.2 million in that undocumented, they had $112 million in the undocumented. But, hey, that was all for research overhead because they're doing $1 billion of research. And that overhead funds is what supports the enterprise and the infrastructure for doing the research. So that money is actually within the units investing in labs and teaching assistants and other things.
Mm-hmm. I had a faculty member suggest to me that really this is just a way of diminishing public education now at the higher level, at higher education, just as the grade school level and public schools at elementary have been certainly affected in recent years, that this is just part of a strategy.
You know, there's something maybe to be said about that, that, you know, that one thing way you can, if you want to disinvest in something, you go ahead and track its credibility. And so one of the things that, you know, I think has happened is the credibility of the university system is being questioned because of this issue. And so it makes it easy, as you saw, you know, you destroy the institution's credibility, then you can go ahead and cut their budget, you know, mm-hmm. without the public really becoming upset about it, because there's a distrust that's been built up against institution, which I think in you look in our case, it really wasn't warranted.
Mm-hmm. You've talked on this program before about how universities like UW-Milwaukee have to be so much more dependent on external fundraising to make up for some of these shortfalls in government money. Did the story in April and everything that's transpired, has that impacted fundraising in any way?
Well, one of the good things was is that, you know, the people closest to us, you know, which are potential funders, I was able to have a conversation with them and was able to explain to them, because they said, well, what's the story about this? Because most of the, you know, our bigger funders are pretty sophisticated and they understand there's a bigger picture here, and they just wanted to know. And I was able to send them the kind of the report that I sent out last April and when I responded, you know, to the original claims. And was able to follow up with them and talk to them and explain to them exactly what we just talked about today, that the money was accounted for and where it was going. And they were very, like I said, they're very knowledgeable. And so it was a very easy explanation, you know, for them. And it didn't really, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think it really has impacted fundraising at all. In mm-hmm. fact, if anything, it's allowed me to be closer to these individuals who, you know, really understand what we're trying to accomplish.
So as you suggest, if there's no budget repair bill, no sudden influx of cash, you're going to wait out another year and a half till the next biennial budget. You talked about communicating with your deans about some of the cuts that were going to have to be made. I mean, what does UWM look like in a year and a half?
Well, I think, you know, we continue to be challenged. One of the concerns I have is that we continue with the core operations. But ultimately, I think you think about having, you know, less sections for students, which is really one of the challenges that we face if we want students to graduate as quickly as possible. And when you continually face cuts, you know, that's really, you know, other services, you know, we've already cut back on. But it's really kind of the core, you know, when you can't offer as many sections to students, you know, ultimately they're not going to graduate as quickly.
Mm-hmm. And you know you're going to be criticized for that, right?
Of course.
Because some lawmaker or somebody, some parents are going to say, well, you guys obviously can't manage your business because my student can't graduate in four and a half years.
Yeah. And, you know, and if when I do get criticized, I will just remind them of, you know, the current budget cuts that are ongoing on our campus now and the challenges that we have in implementing them. You know, oftentimes, you know, particularly now because we're so lean that it does impact the number of offerings we can have.
Mm-hmm. Well, please keep us posted as you continue to meet with lawmakers. I think this is going to be an interesting ongoing story, and we'll be talking about it many more times in the next year and a half. Last month on our program, we talked about the UW System Incentive Grant Program, and you talked about all the hard work that went into come up with proposals for these competitive dollars, and you said, well, decisions would be made shortly. Were they?
Yes, they were, and we are extremely excited about the outcomes of those grants. And as I reported to you know, last month, I was really proud of the way the campus came together and put forward, you know, seven very strong proposals for this program. And the state had $22.5 million set aside really to try to you know, work on helping the economy or working on economic development. And so of the seven proposals that we had submitted, four of them were funded, which you know, we were really excited about. And so of the $22.5 million that was available, we were part of $11.7 million, so more than half, you know, or proposals that we submitted. So when you consider that there's, you know, 13 institutions, you know, in the UW system, I'm very proud of the fact that more than 50% of our proposals were funded into the level of more than half that was all available.
Well, congratulations. That's wonderful. So can you give us an idea of, because last month you kind of went through some of the ones that were being proposed.
Well, I think one then, as you can expect, two of the proposals were around water, and the first one was around aquaculture and aquaponics. Now, if I think we've talked before in the past that this is predicted to be a $5 billion industry in the next 5 to 7 years, and so it's very timely, first of all, that we have, you know, our School of Freshwater Sciences, you know, we have the patents, we have the know-how, and so funding in this area really may help establish Wisconsin, particularly Milwaukee, is the center of the country for aquaponics aquaculture, so we're happy about that one. Similarly, we also had $3 million funded for the Water Technology Accelerator, which is really to support the Water Council and the water industries here. And so we're going to have state-of-the-art facilities. First of all, in the Global Water Center, we're going to be putting in labs that are really second to none in the country around water technology, and also we're going to have some additional equipment and funds to support things at our School of Freshwater Science and the $53 million new addition that's going on there. So, you know, those two grants are really, you know, supporting what is really becoming, a key area for the city of Milwaukee and for the state for that matter. The other technology-based proposal that was funded was an Applied Chemistry Center of Excellence for southeastern Wisconsin. This is something that, you know, I often hear when I am out meeting with different corporations that we really need some support for chemistry because so many of the businesses, you know, here, you know, have a chemical chemistry component. So we're actually going to have a state-of-the-art facility, you know, built on our campus to support where people that need work with chemistry or in the area of chemical engineering will be able to come to and get support and really help their businesses grow and expand. So we're very excited about that. And finally, we're also part of a proposal that addresses the nursing shortage. One of the things is that There's a statewide initiative to increase the number of nurses. As we think about healthcare, nurses are playing a more and more important role in delivering that healthcare, particularly when you think about what's going on outstate. There's really a shortage of doctors and primary care physicians outstate. So this program will really help expand student enrollment, enhance workforce development in nursing going forward.
Yeah. So this was really great news. I mean, you guys were scrambling to get these proposals together, and obviously it paid off.
Yes. Yeah. So we're very pleased. When I think, you know, when you take a look at all the institutions across the state, we were by far the biggest, you know, winner in receiving these funds, and we're very excited about that. And to have 4 out of 7 proposals funded is really exciting. And I think in comparison, I think Madison had 1 out of 10 funded. So, And so, you know, that just makes me very proud.
So I think I know the answer to this, but because, you know, you can get headlines all along the way on a number of different things. So you got $11 billion here. We spent the first 10 minutes talking about some of the cuts that the university was facing. You know, to the casual observer, it's like, what are you complaining about? You just got $11 million of new money.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things to think about, Dave, is that these funds are targeted for very specific purposes, and it's all about economic development. The cuts we're facing, you know, are really hurting our core operations. And so one thing, you know, I will put it, it's almost like a forced reallocation, because this money, you know, is the UW system money, and it's, you know, the investment is going into a very specific area of economic development, whereas the funds that are taken away are more from our core, you know, our core development.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to the Chancellor's Report on WUWM. Mike Lovell, the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, is our guest in conversation. I find it intriguing that you try very hard to stay close to students, and I know that it must be difficult, because, you know, when we talk every month and you talk about all the meetings you have to attend and the conferences you speak at, it's got to be very difficult to just sort of stay in touch with students.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do several things to try to keep in touch with students. And first of all, you know, one of the things I really miss in being chancellor is being in the classroom and having that interaction with the students. You know, that so I have to find other ways to, you know, touch base with them. And because, you know, I think we all recognize the reason why we're all at the university is for the students. And so if you're not in touch with the students and know kind of what they're thinking about, what some of their concerns are, what some of the suggestions are, that you can really lose sight of why we're at the university. So I do a couple of things. The first is I have regular office hours several times a month where students can come in and talk to me about different issues or different ideas that they have. I also try to have kind of informal sessions, kind of brown bags or different, you know, host students for pizza and other things to try to just create a dialogue, just, you know, just to understand, you know, what's on their mind. And so
the students actually show up for these open office hours?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So they sign up. It's all online. And so there's a website. They just log in and say, put in, you know, why they want to meet with me. And there's a, you know, our student affairs, you know, kind of vets, make sure I'm not getting complaints about a particular instructor or a particular course. You know, I really can't do much about that. But if they have other ideas, you know, that are a little bit bigger or broader, you know, then we always let the students come and talk to me about them.
So describe, I mean, what was that like? The types of students you meet with, their concerns, are you ever surprised by what they say?
Oh, yeah, I'm very surprised. Yeah. But it's amazing how many good ideas the students come to me with on ways to improve campus. And it's some of the, you know, I often describe that, you know, those can be the most valuable things for us to hear.
Mm-hmm. Like, can you give me some ideas? I mean, they talk about, if they can't talk about their professor, they talk about what, grades or?
Oh, no. And the most recent one, you know, that I maybe will share with you actually falls in line with what we just talked about previously around the idea of water. And it was, I had a student came in during my last set. Her name's Alice Cones, and she is originally from Kenya. And she came in to tell me that, you know, she was, you know, working with some people back at her back in Kenya at her village, actually the government agencies, that knew about our School of Freshwater Sciences and said, listen, do you think they can help us with the water problems? And she came to me and said, and she walked in my office, and she described to me what it was like for her growing up in Kenya, where she had to miss school 2 or 3 days a week because she had to walk 15 kilometers to the river to get water for her village, her and, you know, some of the other women and children in her village, and it wasn't always safe to do so. And so she came to me and said, listen, is there any way that we can utilize what's going on in Milwaukee to solve the water problems that we face in villages in Kenya, because 56% of Kenyans do not have access to fresh, clean water. And so I said, sure. And she said, well, how about if I invite a delegation, you know, from the government where I grew up in Kenya here, and can you arrange a meeting? And so I did. So we just about a week or so ago, we brought a group of Kenyan officials to meet with David Garman, the dean of our School of Freshwater Science, and Dean Amhouse from the Water Council to talk about their challenges. And so we actually, it was so fitting because we met in the Global Water Center, you know. And so, and it was, for me, it was kind of an aha moment where you had a group from Kenya from halfway around the world coming to Milwaukee to solve their water problems. And what was really, really exciting is that within the first 45 minutes, we already had three or four potential solutions to help them with their water problems. As a matter of fact, the most exciting thing, one of the most exciting things about it was, is that there was a way that they could get the runoff from the school. The school was the biggest building in the village and had the biggest roof, and we could actually take the runoff water. They didn't have gutters or anything on it now, and actually, you know, kind of save that water in cistern. And then there was a filtration system that the School of Freshwater Science, the technology they developed, for about only cost about $3,000 that they could then filter the water out to provide water for up to 10,000 people. And a couple of things that, you know, we've taken this a step further. That water filtration system was something that they could reproduce and sell to other villages. And so it becomes a business model for them. The fact that the system was going to be at their school became an educational opportunity for them to teach the students about, you know, water and chemistry and all the things that were involved there. But and maybe the most exciting thing was that we, our students, were going to be going over and implementing and training them. So what an experience it was for our students to be able to go over there from our School of Freshwater Science to be able to do that. And again, this village had been working, you know, in this way probably for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And they came to us. And in April, this new system is going to be up in place. And so within about 4 months, you know, we're changing their lives.
Yeah.
And so, and to think about it, so now the women are not going to have to miss school.
Yeah,
because they're going to get water, you know. So think about how Milwaukee is changing the world.
Well, that is that's a good feel good story. So as you say, you try to, you know, you go out and have pizza with students, and I know you recently got to spend some time with the Honors College students. What were their concerns? What did you talk about?
Well, I mean, there's really a lot of things, and you know, one of the things that the Honors College students, you know, really talked about was how important the Honors College approach was for their education, how special it was to be in these small classrooms and just have these really in-depth discussions with their classmates. And they really just wanted to ensure that we could actually not only, you know, keep doing what we were doing, but maybe can we expand it to other students because it was such a unique experience and opportunity for them. And so we talked a lot about how we could hire, you know, additional staffing. You know, one of the challenges we actually have is obviously with the budget cut, it's difficult. But the Honors College is one area of the campus that really is growing. And they had another record. They had a record freshman class coming in, and so we really need to find ways to support them. And one of the things that they're very exciting about is potentially having housing. You know, they're in the Columbia St. Mary's Hospital, the old nursing building, where there are rooms. And so we talked about within the next 2 or 3 years is actually providing housing so they can really have a living learning community located there.
On this program in the past, you've talked about the importance of innovation and ways in which the university can support innovation. And I know that recently you had about 100 area innovators and UWM students show up at the Chancellor's residence. I hope you knew they were coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But what was the purpose of that get together?
Well, you know, I think we've talked before in the past, there's something kind of special going on in Milwaukee right now and around the areas of innovation entrepreneurship. I think that we feel on our campus with the Student Startup Challenge. We've talked about Scale Up Milwaukee. We've talked about innovation in Milwaukee, you know, Mike. And so this meeting is really just a way to get the people that are involved, you know, in all of these initiatives and kind of at the forefront, really getting, you know, the entrepreneurs and potential funders and the business leaders together in an informal way so we can make the connections and create opportunities for others. This is really modeled off of things that go on in other cities. And I think this was the fifth meeting of what's the group called the Foundry. And actually, I'm very excited about the fact that the Greater Milwaukee Committee asked UWM to host you know, this meeting. And so we've had a lot of events at the Chancellor's residence in the last year. We're coming up almost a year of, since moving in, but this was by far the biggest. Mm-hmm. You know, we had over 100 individuals, and so it was pretty exciting for us to host that. But what was really, really nice is that we've talked about our Student Startup Challenge that happens on campus. Well, we had the actual winners, the 8 teams from the last round, we actually had them kind of in our living room with their projects. And and so we had the other innovators from the city, on first from the city, and the funders. And so there was, you know, there was several of the teams were actually asked to submit proposals to some of the funders. So I think maybe we might get some good connections there that would come out of that and benefit our own students. But really, you know, these types of informal meetings, you know, are a lot of times when, you know, special things happen. You know, we talk about a lot of times, you know, when the benefits of, you know, of co-locating with people is being around the water cooler and, right, and having discussions. Well, this is just, you know, another way we're getting people discussing around the water cooler in a maybe different format.
Yeah. Speaking about kind of reconnecting, I know you had a couple of events this past month where you got a chance to renew acquaintances with several alumni.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things that, you know, the great part of my job is seeing all the fantastic things that our graduates have accomplished. And we had two events this month. The first one was I gave the Chancellor's Innovation Award. This is the third time we'd given it. And we gave it to Beth Pritchard, who just had a phenomenal career of, you know, kind of starting and running several successful businesses, including Bath & Body Works, White Barn Candle, and Victoria's Secret. And she is truly, when we talk about being an innovator, she's truly someone who discusses her success was by breaking all the rules, you know, of the consumer products industries which she was operating in, and really lived her life out of the box, you know, in terms of doing that, doing things where, you know, being in an industry where most people were only bringing forward 10% new products per year, and her doing 35%, you know, and really being, you know, edgy and bold and just doing, you know, phenomenal things.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. We're actually just about running out of time here, and I want to thank you for joining us again, and wishing your family a good holiday season, and appreciate you joining us again today.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Mike Lovell is our guest in conversation as he joins us every month here on the Chancellor's Report. I'm Dave Edwards. Thanks for joining us.